Usha, the Buddha, the emptiness of the heart, talks on Zen, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number one.
Beloved Book One, Rupa has said, taking things easily and without forcing, after some time the rush of thought, outward and inward, subsides naturally, and the true faith shows itself. Now body and mind, free from all motivations, always appear as void and absolute sameness, shining like the brightness of heaven at the center of the vast expanse, a phenomenal thing, and needing no polishing or cleaning. This is beyond all concepts, beyond being and non-being. Leave your innumerable knowing and seeing and understanding and go to that greatness of space. When you come to that vastness, there is no speck of Buddhism in your heart. And when there is no speck of knowledge about you, you will have the true sight of Buddhas and patriarchs. The true nature is like the immensity of space which contains all things. When you can go and come in all regions equally, when there is nothing specially yours, no within and no without, when you conform to high and conform to low, conform to the square and conform to the round, that is it. The emptiness of the sea allows waves to rise. The emptiness of the mountain valley makes the voice echo. The emptiness of the heart makes the Buddha. When you empty the heart, things appear as in a mirror, shining there without differences between them. Life and death and illusion, all the Buddhas are one's own body. Zen is not something mysterious. It is just hitting and piercing through. If you cut off all doubt, the course of life and death is cut off naturally. I ask you all, do you see it or don't you? How in June the snow melts from the top of Mount Fuji.
Buku has come to the ultimate expression of the experience of your own being. Very rarely a master has succeeded to such a point as Bhukko has succeeded in his statement. Listen carefully, because rarely you will meet a Bhukko again. Bhukko said, taking things easily and without forcing, after some time the rush of thought, outward and inward, subsides naturally, and the true faith soul itself. That's what I have been telling to you. To be a Buddha is not a difficult job. It is not some achievement for which you need a Nobel Prize. It is the easiest thing in the world. Because it has already happened without your knowing. The Buddha is already breathing in you. Just a little recognition. Just a little turning inward. And that has to be done not forcibly. If you do it forcibly, you will miss the point. It is very delicate. You have to look inwardly, playfully, not seriously. That's what he means, taking things easily. Don't take anything seriously. Existence is very easy. You have got your life without any effort. You are living your life without any effort. You are breathing perfectly well without being reminded. Your heart beats continues even in your sleep. So easy is existence with you. But you are not so easy with existence. You are very close-fisted. You want everything to be turned in achievement. And enlightenment cannot be an achievement. That which you have already, how it can be an achievement? The authentic master simply takes away things which you don't have and you believe that you have, and he gives you that which you already have. You are having many things which you don't have at all. Just believing that you have them. The master's function is that of a surgeon, to cut all that is not you and leave behind just the essential core, the eternal being. It is a very easy phenomenon. You can do it on your own. There is no problem and no risk. Taking things easily. But people take things very seriously. They take things very seriously. And that spoils the whole game. And remember, life is a gain. Once you understand it as a gain, a deep playfulness arises on its own account. The victory is not the point. The point is to play totally, joyous, dancing. What is called playfulness is a very essential point in the inquiry of your own being. Taking things easily, says Bhukko, and without forcing, after some time the rush of thought, outward and inward, subsides naturally, and the true faith shows itself. When I say to you that meditation is nothing but thoughtlessness, you can misunderstand me. You are not to do anything to become thoughtless, because whatever you will do will be again a thought. You have to learn to see the procession of thought extending by the side of the road, as if it does not matter to you what is passing by, just the ordinary traffic. If you can take your thought in such a manner that they are not of much concern, easily, slowly, the caravan of thoughts which has continued for thousands of years disappears. You have to understand a simple thing, that giving attention is giving nourishment. If you don't give any attention, remain unconcerned, the thoughts start dying on their own. They don't have any other way of energy, other source of life. You are their energy, and because you go on giving them attention seriously, you think it is very difficult to be free from thought. It is the easiest thing in the world, but it has to be done in the right way. The right way is just stand by the side. The traffic goes on. Let it go. Don't make any judgment of good and bad. Don't appreciate. Don't condemn. That is what is meant to be easy. It is all okay. Without forcing, and that is something that has to be remembered, because our natural tendency is that if we have to become thoughtless, why not force them? Why not throw them out? But by the very act of forcing them, you are giving them energy. You are giving them nourishment. you are taking note of them and you are making them important, so important that without throwing them you cannot meditate. Just try to throw any single thought and you will see how difficult it is. The more you throw it, the more it bounces back. It will enjoy the game very much. Because you are going to be finally defeated. You have taken a wrong route. I have always told an ancient Tibetan story. A young man was very much interested in the esoteric, in the mysterious. He found a saint who was known to have many secrets, but it is very difficult to get any secrets from him. He said, "I will see. I will devote my whole life into his service, but I will get the secrets, the mysteries." So he remained with the old saint. The old saint told him that you are unnecessarily wasting your time. I don't have anything. I'm just a poor old soul. Because I don't speak, people think I'm keeping some secret. And I don't have anything to speak, so I remain silent. But the man said, "I cannot be persuaded so easily. You will have to give me the secret which opens the door of all the mysteries." Tired of the young man, because 24 hours he was there, the old poor saint has to arrange for his food, has to ask somebody to take care for his clothes. The winter is coming, he will need more clothes. It has become a burden. Finally, the old man got fed up. He told the young fellow that today I am going to tell you the secret. It is not very difficult. It is very simple. In Tibet, it is a common mantra religious people repeat, Om Mani Padme Hum. He said, everything is hidden in this. But the young man said, "Don't befool me. Everybody knows this mantra. It is not a secret. It is the most widely known mantra to the Tibetans." He said, "It is true, it is widely known. But the key is not known to them how to open it. Do you know the key how to open it?" The young man said, "Key? I have never heard that there is a key to open a mantra." That is the secret. The key is, while you are repeating the mantra, just 5 minutes, just don't let any monkey pop in your head. He said, "You seem to be an old idiot. In my whole life I have never thought of a monkey. Why should I thought? He rushed down the stairs of the temple where the old saint lived. But strangely, even though he is not reciting the mantra, monkeys started coming, giggling. He will close his eyes and they will be there. He will run this side and they will be there. They were not outside, they were inside his head. And slowly, slowly the crowd was becoming big. As far as he can see, only monkeys and monkeys and doing all kinds of circus. He said, "My God, this is the key. I'm finished. I have not even started the mantra." But he said, "Let me take a good bath and get rid of all these monkeys." But the more he pushed them, the more they jumped towards him. He took the bath, he burned the incense, he sat in a religious lotus posture. But whatever he was doing, monkeys were watching from every side. He said, "It is a shame, monkeys have never visited this house." He could not retreat. The whole night he tried. He could not repeat this simple mantra, Om Mani Padme Hum, without monkeys jumping in. By the morning he was so tired, he said, "That old saint, I will kill him. What kind of key?" In the morning he rushed to the old saint and said, "Please take your key. I am almost mad." He said, "That's why I was not telling anybody, because the key is very difficult. Now do you understand why I was silent?" He said, "I don't want to listen a single word from you. You just take this key back and let me go home. And I don't want these monkeys to follow me." He said, "If you give me the key back, never repeat the mantra again. Otherwise, the monkeys will come. I cannot help. They are not in my power." He dropped the mantra, he dropped the key, he descended the same steps, and there was no monkey at all. He closed his eyes and there was no monkey. He looked all around and there was no monkey. He said, "It is strange." He tried just once on the way. What happened? Then he said, "Om Mani Padme Hum," and closed his eyes, and all they were coming from all directions. You cannot repress any thought. The very repressive process gives it energy, life, strength. And it weakens you, because you become a defeated partner in the game. The easiest thing is not to force, but to be just a witness, If a monkey comes, let him come. Just say hello. And he will go. But don't tell him to go. Just be a witness that a monkey has come, or a thousand monkeys have come. What does it matter? It is none of your business. They may be going to some gathering. Some religious festival. So let them go. It is none of your concern, and soon the crowd will disappear, seeing that the man is not interested. All your thoughts are in the same category. Never force any thought to go away. Otherwise, it will rebound with greater energy. And the energy is yours. And you are on a defeating line. The more you will throw it away, the more it will come. Hence, what Bhukko is saying is the only way. I say the only way to be thoughtless. Don't pay any attention. Just remain silently watching. All kinds of things, monkeys and elephants, let them pass. Soon you will find an empty road. And when you find an empty road, you have found an empty mind, naturally. And everything outward and inward subsides. There is a tremendous silence which easiness brings. Now body and mind, free from all motivation, always appear as void and absolute stillness. When you are in the state of no mind, which is equivalent to thoughtlessness, when there is no thought cloud in your mind moving, you attain to clarity of no mind. Mind is simply a combination of all the thoughts, of all the clouds. Mind has no independent nature of its own. When all the thoughts are gone and the sky is clean and clear, you will see that everything that you have paid so much attention is nothing but emptiness. Your thoughts were all empty, they contained nothing, they were void. whatever you thought they contained was your own energy. You have withdrawn your energy, just an empty shell of the thought falls down. You have withdrawn your identity, and immediately the thought is no more alive. It was your identity that was giving it life, force, and strangely enough, you thought that your thoughts are very strong and it is difficult to get rid of them, and you were making them strong. You were cultivating them. Just by forcing them, you were getting into a fix. I agree with Bhukho. I have agreed on my own experience that you can simply sit or lie down and let the thoughts pass by. They will not leave a trace even. Just don't get interested. And don't be disinterested either. Just neutral. To be neutral is to be easy. And to be neutral is to take the very life force that you have given to your heart back. Suddenly a man of no thought becomes so full of energy which he has spread in the thought unnecessarily. He was weak because he was nursing thoughts which lead nowhere. They promise. Thoughts are politicians. They promise great things to come. But the moment they have power, they forget all their promises. This has been going on for centuries. Those promises are just seductive. Your thoughts are promising you many things. You can be this, you can be that, and they drive you, they give you motivation to become the greatest leader in the world, to become the richest man in the world. They drive you into ambitions. They become your masters. It is one of the most weird phenomenon that the servants become masters and the master becomes just a servant. The moment you take your energy back, you become a tremendous force. gathered on your own being and center. This is the first and the most important thing to understand. Never force anything, just let it go easily. If you ever want to find what is the secret of your life, then you have to go inward, and thoughts always are going outward. Every thought takes you outward. Then all thoughts cease. There is nowhere to go. You simply are at home. This at-homeness is meditation. Utter silence and peace the way. In this silence, every ambition seems to be stupid. The whole world of objects seems to be nothing but a dream. And your own being shines in its brightness of heaven at the center of the vast expanse of phenomenal things and needing no polishing or cleaning. Your own being is so pure, so unpolluted, not even a particle of dust has ever reached there, cannot reach. Only your consciousness can reach there. And a consciousness arises in you with no mind. With no mind you become so wakeful, so watchful, nowhere to go outside because all thoughts are gone. So you turn inward and for the first time face your own original being. This is beyond all concept. What you are going to face in your meditation is beyond all concept. This is a very pregnant statement. Beyond being and non-being. We are using the word being because you will not be able to understand while your thoughts are there that something beyond being and beyond non-being is in existence within you. But when thoughts are gone, the first encounter is a being, an individual being, bright and clean. And as you enter this being, you find going beyond your individuality into the universal, which is beyond being and non-being. This is what ultimate enlightenment is. And Bhukko has put it in the simplest possible way. Leave your innumerable knowledge, knowing and seeing and understanding, and go to that greatness of space. When you come to that vastness, there is no speck of Buddhism in your heart. He is really a great master. His love to Buddha is great, but that does not mean that he is a follower of Buddha. He is saying that when you enter into this great space, you will not find anything, no speck of Buddhism even, in your heart. And when there is no speck of knowledge about you, you will not know anything even about yourself. You will have the true sight of the Buddhas and the great masters. Buddha himself has a great difficulty. Perhaps no man has such a great difficulty to explain his experience. In this country, the self, Atma, has been considered to be the ultimate experience. The two other religions of this country, Hinduism and Jainism, both have emphasized that to know yourself is all. There is nothing beyond it. Now Buddha was going against the whole India's tradition, saying that the self is only a door to no self. Don't stop at the door. It is a bridge to be passed. Don't make your house on the bridge. Because a vaster universe is ready to welcome you if you can leave this small idea of yourself. What is this self that you go on carry, that all the traditions of this country and other countries think so much of it? Hundreds of philosophers came to Gautam Buddha that what you are saying goes against the Vedas, against the Upanishads. He said, what can I do? It is my own experience. I cannot deny it. The self has to be transcended. Only then you become one with the universe. The dewdrop has to disappear into the ocean. Why cling with the dewdrop? What you are gaining by it? Have you ever observed all the religions teach, you should liberate yourself from misery, from sin. You should earn virtue so that you can make a place in paradise. You are the center of all the religions, but not of this. All the religions say, liberate yourself with your attachments. Only Zen has the strange courage to say, liberate yourself from yourself. Liberating yourself from your attachments is a child's play. The real authentic seeker finally liberates not only from other things, but even himself. He drops the very idea that I am. Existence is. Looked at this point, it can be said you are the center of all misery. And however you try, you will find only changing misery, from one misery to another misery. Maybe in the gap you feel a little light. From one marriage to another marriage, just in the meantime, while you have to wait, you feel good. But this goodness is not going to last. You are already filling the form for another marriage. You are the problem. All other problems are just your children. A busload of children. And you are the driver. Buddhism particularly introduced the idea that it is not a question of dropping this greed, that anger, this passion, that possession. The question is dropping yourself completely. Disappearing into the universal energy from where we have arisen. In India he was not understood. I am experiencing the same thing. In India I am not understood. Because India has been for 10,000 years or more believed in the self as the ultimate value. Self is not the ultimate value. What you are going to do with the self when you find? Just sitting stupidly, looking weird to everybody, just or a moment think you have found yourself. Now what you are going to do? And remember, once you have found it, you cannot escape from it. It clings like German glue. It is not Indian glue. Buddha took its tremendous step in the world of consciousness when he said the self is only a stepping stone. A step beyond it. And going beyond it you are just empty. But this empty is not nothingness. The word that Buddha has used and which has been being translated either as emptiness or as nothingness. But in English, both the words have a negative connotation. Buddha's word was shunyata. It is not a negative phenomenon. Bhikkhu gives it perhaps the best expression I have come across. When you can go and come in all regions equally, when there is nothing especially yours, no within, no without, when you conform to high and conform to low, conform to the square and conform to the round, that is it. When you are simply available, with no self, you don't have any boundaries anymore. Without boundaries, you can conform with anything. The emptiness of the sea allows waves to rise. And your emptiness will also allow waves of blissfulness, peacefulness, splendor, an unknown glory. You are at the highest peak available to any consciousness. But all these are still waves according to Bhikkhu. That's why I say he has made a great statement. The emptiness of the sea allows waves to rise. The emptiness of the mountain valley makes the voice echo. It is not empty. Otherwise, how it can equivalent, just here close by, in Mathuran, there is an equipoint. A very clear equipoint. I have seen other equipoints in other mountains also. Whatever you say, it simply repeats. The whole valley, if you bark like a dog, the whole valley barks like a dog. If you sing a song, the whole valley sings the song. Its emptiness allows it to conform to anything. And Bhukko is saying that when you are utterly empty of being and no being, of mind and no mind, when you are just emerge into the universal, it can be said from one side that you are empty, but from other side you are too full. Now you can conform to anything. You can be the moon, you can be the rose, you can be the cloud, or you can just remain the empty sky. For the first time you are free to be anything you want. For the first time your emptiness allows you to experience existence from different corners. It is a vast phenomenon. We know only small parts of it, because our selfness creates a boundary. We cannot go beyond the bounds. The emptiness of the heart makes the Buddha. Once your heart is empty, you are the Buddha. Sitting, silent, utterly blissful at home. When I say to you that you are a Buddha, I mean it. Just you have to get recover from your dreams, afflictions, addictions. Just you have to penetrate deeply to the point where even the self starts disappearing and the door opens to the vast, to the infinite. To be a Buddha is the ultimate experience of joy, of eternity, of immortality, freedom and liberation. And nobody else can do it for you. It is simple that you have to do it yourself. When you empty the heart, things appear as in a mirror, finding there without differences between them, life and death and illusion. All the Buddhas are one's own body. Zen is not something mysterious. It is just hitting and piercing through. I am reminded a great industrialist has imported a totally new sophisticated mechanism. It worked so beautifully, 100 times more production than the older one, but one day it stopped. Nobody knew what to do. The manufacturers were informed. They said, we can send our man, but his fee is $10,000 plus all traveling expenses. The industrialist was losing thousands of dollars every day. He agreed, he said, send immediately, right now. The man came from the airport and without wasting a single moment, he took out from his handbag a small hammer and hit the mechanism at a certain point, and it started working. The owner of the industry says, but this is too much. $10,000 for just hitting this little hammer. The expert says, no. For hitting the hammer, even $1 will do. The real thing is where to hit. It is true, Zen is something, is not something mysterious. It is just hitting and piercing through. But don't believe in book. The point is where to hit. It is not mysterious. But the problem is where to hit. Once you hit it at the right time, at the right place, it is really very simple. There is nothing mysterious about it. That's what I have been continuously trying you to explain. Experience, because there is no way to tell you where to hit. Everybody has to find the place, going deeper into himself, seeing from where the light is coming, when moving in that direction without any fear, this is what he means by hitting and piercing through. Then don't stop. It will be very beautiful. Even in the beginning, the moment you see your life source, it will have a tremendous beauty and a desire to stop that you have come. Don't do that. Much more lies ahead. Until you are finished completely, when you look all around and you don't find yourself, that is the goal. This beyond is the Buddha. If you cut off all doubts, the course of life and death is cut off naturally. I ask you all, do you see it or don't you? How in June there is no melt from the top of Mount Fuji? He's saying just as in June there is no stars melting from Mount Fuji. So simply, without making any fuss, as the June comes, Vaishnu does not say, wait a little, I am engaged into something else, that I have to wait a little. No, no resistance, no delaying, no postponing. As the June comes, Vaishnu starts melting. So when you reach to the point where you feel this is my center, then it starts melting. Your June has come. Then it starts melting and disappearing. Your very disappearance is making you the whole universe. Buddha has said that when I disappeared, I saw stars within me, sun rising, sunset, full moon night, everything within me, not without me. It was my boundary that was keeping them out. Now the boundary is no more there. Everything has fallen in. Now I am the whole. At the time of his death, Zenman Guin wrote, all doctrines split asunder, Zen teaching cast away, four score years and one, the sky now cracks and falls, the earth cleaves open, in the heart of the fire lies a hidden spring. When all is dropping and disappearing, in the heart of all this disappearance is hidden your spring. From this point you will start growing new flowers that you have never seen before. Manisha has asked, in the West they say that love to full heart makes the world go round. Judging by the causality rate, full hearts don't seem to be the answer. What is the world of the empty heart of jail? In the first place, whatever is said in the West that love to full heart makes the world go round, it is all nonsense. Whether you are here or not, the world will continue to go round. And two hearts full of love, where you are going to find? The world would have stopped long before if it was dependent on two hearts full of love. Even to find one heart is very difficult. Two is too much. But those are just mass mind oriented proverbs. Not a statement of a man like Bukko. When Bukko says the empty heart is the Buddha, he is talking about a very authentic experience. And it does not depend on anybody else. Love is both a joy and a misery, because two are involved. Wherever there is duality, there is going to be conflict. You can keep the conflict for a few days on the honeymoon, but after the honeymoon, the conflict arises on every point. What kind of curtains? And immediately there are two voices. What kind of carpet and what kind of literature, what kind of furniture? On every point you will find those great lovers are in absolute disagreement. There is the beginning of real love, which always ends in a divorce. The world of religion is not the world of duality. It is a world of oneness. You have to find your own heart utterly empty, empty of all rubbish, and when your heart is empty of all rubbish, you are the Buddha, and there is no other experience which goes beyond it. Now, before you become Buddha, few laughter, because you may come back, you may not come back. Those who will come back, they will celebrate. But those who will not come back from this great inner journey, for them, some laughter as a goodbye. Kovalevsky and Olga are making love in the upstairs bedroom, just as Kovalevsky is about to start up his machinery. They hear a loud banging noise down the stairs. What is that? Asked Olga, jumping up in bed. Nothing, friend Kovalevsky. Come on, let us get on with it. No, no way, demands Olga. No love making until you find out what is going on downstairs. Poor Kovalevsky stumbles downstairs with a very large erection and slips on the light. Suddenly the cat jumps out of the window, the dog dives under the sofa, and the parrot, fed in its cage, looks around frantically, then tucks one leg under its wing and screams, "Wait, wait, you silly polar, you would not hurt a cripple." Kevin and Mrs. Huber, the TV couch potatoes, are propped up in their potato couch, chewing peanuts and watching their favorite soap opera, The Potato Family, on television. When the doorbell rings, Chip the dog it starts barking and parents look around at it and accidentally pop a peanut into his ear. He is still sitting in his potato couch with his head tipped to one side trying to get the peanut out when his daughter and her boyfriend Frito walk in. Frito immediately sees the situation and offers to help Evans to get the peanut out. "Look," says Frito, "I will cover your mouth. Stick my two fingers into your nostrils and then blow into your other ear." In desperation, parents agreed to give this a try. Frito stuffed his fingers tightly into the cow's potato's nose and blowed into his ear. Sure enough, the peanut popped out the other side. Later that evening, Terence and Mrs. Tuber are propped up in bed watching a rerun of the Potato Family on television. When Mrs. Tuber asks her husband that Frito is such a nice boy, "What do you think he will do when he leaves school?" "I don't know what his plans are," replies Terence, "but from the smell of his finger, I think he will probably be our son-in-law." Amen. Says Swami Haridas to his friend Stonehead Nishriya, "How come you got home so early from your date with papaya pineapple last night?" "Well," explains Stonehead, "after dinner we went back to her apartment. We sat on her bed listening to music, talked for a while and drank some herb tea. Then she slowly undressed, pulled back the bed cover, lay down, reached over me and turned out the light." "So," asked Haridas, "what happened?" "Well, I can take a hint," replied Stonehead, "so I went home." be silent. Close your eyes. Feel your body to be frozen. Gather all your life energy inward and look in. Deeper and deeper find out the center of your being. Finding the center of your being is the door that leads you beyond yourself, that makes you a Buddha. Be well acquainted with this new space you are in, because you have to carry the Buddha 24 hours in your gestures, in your actions, in your words, in your silence, waking or sleeping. If one can remain this silence, then there is no need to follow any discipline, any virtue. Everything will happen on its own accord, spontaneously. And when things happen spontaneously, they have a duty of their own. It is a blissful moment. You are dissolved into an oceanic consciousness. You are at home. Realizing that which you have carried since the very beginning, for thousands of lives, but have never looked into it. Never searched for it. Have taken it for granted. It is the most precious treasure in you, It is the whole universe falling in you. Nivedana. To make it clear, relax, and just to watch the body, the mind. You remain a watcher. Just a watcher. Your body is born and dies. Your mind every moment changes. Only this watcher is your eternity. Remember it. Remind yourself of it. And slowly, slowly make it your ordinary. Simple life experience. Just like breathing. You don't have to make any effort. When your Buddha is so spontaneous, you have found the truth. Nivedana, come back and bring with you all the fragrance that you have gathered. Sit down slowly, gracefully, as a Buddha for a few seconds. This is going to be your life style. I don't want any followers. I want everybody to be a Buddha, a master unto himself. of the mantra?
Yes, of course.
Can we celebrate the Buddha?
Yes, of course.
Love the one. Thank you.